Hey, this is Zaderman.
And this is Chris.
And we're the other staff of White Rock, and we really like listening to the Gamers Haven.
These are...
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Well, welcome back to the wonderful Gamers Haven podcast. It's been a while since we sat down and recorded. We're recording on November 2nd, 2008.
We record?
We do, apparently.
Yes. A lot.
We've been...
Just not recently.
We've been relatively busy, or lazy, or both. Really depends on how you want to look at it.
I've been lazy, they've been busy.
I've been moving out of my apartment in small bursts.
Yes.
I lost my job. That was fun. And now focusing entirely on school right now and helping out at my mother's house. So I am officially become the 28-year-old living in his mother's, not living in his mother's basement. So.
Living in his mother's house.
Living in my mother's house. But that's fine. We can thank the economy for that.
Yeah. Every one of us has been hit by the economy in some way, shape, or form. Ethan lost his job. I haven't been able to find a job. I was working a job for a company doing wiring for networking, but I got really sick and I couldn't do it anymore. And so I wasn't going to sit there and have them wait.
Kidney and a lung removed.
Yes, that's why I talk with this raspy voice now.
We've always talked with a raspy voice.
No, it's not that raspy. But we're here.
Jeremy's here freshly with a haircut.
It's true.
Yeah, I just noticed that. Yeah, nice haircut.
He had his ears lowered, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And then replaced.
He's definitely a bullet head. I was a bullet head several weeks ago, but not as much anymore.
And he brought his wife with him, and yes. I'm sure she will chip in when she has something that she wants to say.
Maybe.
We have a peanut gallery that's wandering around in addition to the...
Yeah, podcast. There seems to be explosions off in the distance.
Yeah, someone's blowing stuff up in Kenya, I think. I think they're playing Far Cry 2.
In Kenya?
Right, there you go.
Yeah, on the Kenya. PC. Where can you see lions?
Yes.
Only in Kenya.
Come to Kenya, we got lions.
It has been a while since we sat down to record, and that's mostly my fault, because I've been lazy and busy with other things.
See, I never really wanted to record on a Saturday or Friday night.
Jeremy kept poking me, going, hey, we should record, we should record, we should record.
We have a podcast, maybe we should record.
We should record.
Oh, wait, we have a podcast.
Oh, wait, we have a podcast.
Yeah, maybe we should record. Hey, look, a podcast.
This episode is really sort of a catch-up episode on everything. We're going to catch up on a lot of reviews. We're going to catch up on just sort of the general state of gaming, what we've been doing, that sort of thing. So please enjoy the show. We'll be back after this.
This is the Vorpal Network.
This episode is brought to you by RPGBomb.com, an online service that allows their members to set up unique personal profiles that can be linked together through networks of friends and associates.
Deep within the heart of the slums in the rat-ridden city of Punjar, the Beggar King weaves his plots. From the tile rooftops to the filthy alley sewers, even the bravest of sellswords tremble before the Beggar King's fell secrets. Now you must bring his reign to an end. For more information, visit www.vorpalnetwork.com or www.canadiancrusaders.com. Sellswords of Punjar, an adventure for characters of levels 1 to 3. Published by Goodman Games.
So I watched a lot of cool, scary movies on Friday evening.
What'd you watch? Well, Halloween? Well, you
Halloween.
So, okay, let's go ahead and kick it off. It's November 2nd, so obviously Halloween is fresh on our minds. Jeremy, you said you watched some scary movies.
Yeah, we, one, our front lights burned out, so we knew we weren't going to have any kids stop by.
Nice.
So we didn't buy any candy.
You didn't have any kids stop by at all?
No, yeah. Which was cool. I don't really need any to stop by. So anyway, we didn't have any candy, but I did watch, I'm not saying good movies.
Oh, no.
But I
mean, come on, really, it's Halloween. You're not supposed to watch good
I movies. Watched four movies at the same time.
Although we did watch Poltergeist last night. That is a good movie.
Well, I watched, I believe it was House on Haunted Hill.
Which one?
First one. Oh, well, no, not the original.
Not the original black and white, but the
remake.
The one that Jeffrey Combs.
And, yeah, the one that is actually scary.
The good one, right.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Well, the original one's not bad, but the original one was also made by...
This is the one... 1950. Maybe it wasn't House on Haunted Hill. Yeah. It's the one with the insane asylum that locks up.
Yeah, that's House on Haunted Hill.
Okay, so I watched the first one.
Jeffrey Rush.
Yes. I watched the end, like the half to the end. Then I watched, during that, I was also watching a 60s Lovecraft movie.
The Dunwich Horror?
Yes.
Oh, God.
I was watching that.
No, you're, the one you were watching at that time, that was Return to the House on Haunted Hill.
No, no, no. I watched both.
Oh, you did?
I watched,
oh, I'm sorry.
Because then I followed it up with Return, and that one movie we kept going.
That one year, that was
so
bad.
I watched that. Then there was some
you have the HD DVD version, which is the Choose Your Own.
Yeah, I got it for $15.
One. It was terrible.
Well, we tried tons of different paths. There was one where I got everybody killed before they ever even got to the house.
The Dunwich, nice. The Dunwich Horrors, though. That one.
That's the one with Dean Stockwell, right?
Yeah, they did.
Terrible. He's Wilbur Whately, I think.
I don't remember him being in it, though.
Yeah, he was.
All I know is that the way they did the music.
The movie version I'm remembering has Dean Stockwell in it, and he's Wilbur Whately.
Well, let's just say that, one, there was random nudity throughout the whole movie. And then there was...
Covered in, like, face paint.
The monster itself was kind of cheesy. But I gotta say, the atmosphere was really pretty cool.
The movie was about preparing the guy's girlfriend for birthing the spawn of Satan, which has nothing to do with the actual story.
Well, it wasn't Satan. It was the old ones. Well, they said the old ones.
Did they call it the old ones?
Yes, they did. Throughout the whole movie, he was trying to call the old ones up. And what was funny, when they walked away at the end of the movie, guess what? She was pregnant.
Yeah.
And they actually had Cthulhu-esque stuff. He was casting spells, and he had weird gems, and he was like doing weird symbols with his head, and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, so I was watching that. But I was watching another movie.
I thought it was terrible.
Yeah, but it was Friday night. I was like,
yeah,
it's
Halloween. What are you going to do? You got to watch crap.
So there's that. Then I watched two random cartoons. Kargath of Barbaria, which is back on for a little bit.
Sadly.
Oh, God.
I watched the first one. I still say the first one's funny, though.
I was not that impressed with it.
But I watched that. Then I watched some random cartoon. It was like the Club of Gamers and Role Players Comics or something. Basically about these four guys who have a club, and it's just a normal routine, except they're violent beyond all reason, and the city they live in is violent. And it was just Geeks on Rampage. It was funny. Funny, funny stuff.
Well, we like Geeks on Rampage.
Yes.
Really. I watched Dead Space Downfall Friday night, Halloween night, which, if you guys haven't seen that, it's basically the prequel to the actual Dead Space game. Those of you who haven't played the Dead Space game and you're looking for something that might scare you, Dead Space is actually worth picking up. The Dead Space Downfall DVD is an animated prequel to the game to tell you what happened before the game starts. I'd recommend watching it after you play the game, because otherwise it just kind of ruins the whole atmosphere for the game, period. But it was fairly well animated. It was obviously animated by an American company. Mm-hmm. The artwork style is very, very, very... very simplistic. And it's obvious they use a ass ton, there's no other way to describe it, an ass ton of CG, because they were too damn lazy to actually draw the artwork. It's like all the backgrounds are CG, and you're like, that doesn't even blend with the animation.
Yeah,
good
drawing
job.
Takes a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now for me on Halloween, at my mother's house, anyway, my mother was working. My brother had just was recovering, or still is recovering. Hang on. Anyway, my brother was, or still is recovering from some minor surgery. He had done some outpatient surgery. So his wife, Eunice, was basically dealing with that, and I was in charge of handling the little kitties and the candy. So being that we have vicious, maniacal hellhounds at my mother's house, I sat out on the porch with full of candy, and it was a gorgeous night out here.
About 70 degrees.
I don't know what our listeners had to deal with on Halloween, but out here it was beautiful. Clear night, gorgeous night. I wired up my laptop and my used my laptop speakers and piped it outside and listened to the old 1938 broadcast of The War of the Worlds.
Oh, sweet.
The Mercury Theater broadcast of Dracula. I listened to the old radio show, radio broadcast of the Dunwich Horror, ironically.
You were going with quality.
Yes.
I was going with quantity.
I also found some audio recordings of some H.P. Lovecraft stuff. I headed over to yogsothoth.com and picked up some of their audio, their H.P. Lovecraft audio series for our Nameless City, Narlthotep, and others, and also found a reading of The Raven. So
it was cool.
It was entertaining. It was enough to keep me entertained for several hours. So we had a good smattering of kids as Nathan did.
Yeah, we had about 30 kids, which was impressive because last year when we set up for Halloween, we got four. It was like rolling my sneak roll for D&D. We got four. But this year we got a ton, which was awesome, because we were able to hand out a whole lot more candy than last year, and we still have candy left.
We had a ton of kids. From what I understand, we had less than we had last year. I think a lot of that's because there are a lot of places that are around here that were having little, like schools, churches,
some retail, up at the Great
Mall and place like that. We're having trick-or-treat events.
Yeah, so trunk or
treat. Come out sometimes four and
safer.
Six. Yeah. No, I understand why parents are doing it because it's safer. And it's a completely off on a tangent, but I think it's sad we live in a day and age where
you can't go trick or treating through your neighborhood.
We have to think that way, but
yeah.
Anyway,
but yeah, PetSmart up the street on 119th had what they call trunk or treat, where they filled up their parking lot full of people's cars, and you went between cars.
And actually, that whole shopping center right next to that, next to PetSmart at 119th.
Yeah.
Had a big thing from like 4 to 6.
Yeah,
And it's like everyone was doing stuff out there, but it was entertaining.
See, I was pretty much okay not having any kids stop by because damn kids need to stay off my porch.
Nathan and Becca threw their Halloween party, which was a great time
on the 26th. Yep.
Yeah, had a good time. Played some board games. Watched some really bad movies like Black Sheep.
And Creepshow 3, which had nothing to do with the other Creepshow movies and was a smattering of stories that were so horrible that we couldn't even watch it. I had to go downstairs to play board games.
You know how it goes? There are movies that are so bad they're funny, then there are movies that are just
bad.
Yeah.
This was just bad.
Bad.
It was painful to watch.
And no one wanted to watch Feast.
Speaking of bad movies, I just recently watched, yesterday I watched Ultraviolet.
Oh,
I've seen that movie.
Don't see that movie. It's terrible.
I've seen that movie.
It's really sad, Jeremy, that it's from the guy who did Equilibrium.
Yeah, well, you got to make a bad movie once in a
while. So you got to wonder, was Equilibrium his fluke? Or hopefully
Ultraviolet's his fluke.
Because, bad. Anyway, that was our entertaining Halloween festivities. To go way back... one thing we did do, at least I'm a part of, is the Fistful of Comics guys, the Tome Show, and the Gamers Haven joined forces
Triumvirate,
Devastator, and the Constructicons. We joined forces like Voltron and formed the Vorpal Network. So we're all now on one big thing called the Vorpal Network. So enjoy that.
I like the Unholy Triumvirate better.
Yeah, we could be. That's our secret name, I guess. Really. And secondly, there's four of us that are heading the thing up. So
Quadrumvirate.
Fearsome Four, whatever.
Yes,
the Fearsome Four
instead of the Terrible Three.
Because that's already taken, poofters. I take that all back. I love the Fantastic Four. Anyway,
yeah.
What else? Let's see. Let's go ahead and start at the top of the list. Really, we should probably get our Gen Con. At least a little bit of our Gen Con stuff out of the way. Nathan and I made it to Gen Con.
And my wife.
And Becca. Becca made it. Say hi, Becca.
Hi.
I would actually pick that up. Sweet.
She's in another room.
Yes. Both Nathan and I and Becca went to Gen Con, had a good time. I met up with the Fistful of Comics guys and various other podcasters, and had a darn good time. Handed out lots of dice because we had Gamers Haven dice. All the remnants of which are ours to keep. So don't email us for dice. If you want some, we'll see what we can do.
Do you know if you can get a Gamers Haven dice as a whole set?
As far as I know, they only do six-siders.
That's lame.
There's a couple companies online that we could do that through.
Let's think about Chessex. There might be others. We can go with customdice.com, and I think
they'll do a whole set, but it's considerably more expensive. Yeah, it's like $25
for a set.
For a set.
We can look at it. It's eventually.
Think of it this way.
Some of us have jobs.
A set of dice is $8. Set of custom dice is $25. That's a markup of almost 200%. So
yeah.
Well, the way we went, we had six ciders with the sixes were replaced with Gamers Haven logos,
which is awesome. Much better than the Warhammer dice, where the one is replaced with the Warhammer symbol, which is retarded.
Yeah. Which I use my Gamer Haven one for Warhammer, because
and it works well
as far as superior.
Because when the Gamers Haven pops up, you go yeah.
And I've also been getting my ass trounced in every Warhammer game I played.
Side of the table, because we go, ah, man, stupid Gamers Haven. Anyway,
not like you see it that often. You've been wiping the table clean.
Well, we'll talk about that later. but we got a lot of interviews at Gen Con. I know I was running around like a madman.
I think I got about 15, and Ethan got about 50.
Yeah, I got a ton. We got a ton. Some of them weren't necessarily great, but we. We have one interview show out, working on getting the other one all edited together. I had the benefit of sitting down with both Steve Kenson and Robin Laws for about a half an hour apiece and talking to them very one-on-one, which was great. Because obviously anyone who listens to the show knows how awesome we think Mutants and Masterminds is. So I was doing my best to remain out of fanboy mode and being the objective podcaster that you all know that I am.
Yes, Ethan, also known as the Lucky Bastard, because I wasn't aware that he was doing those interviews until after they were done. I'm giving him the finger right now, since you can't see it.
I seem to remember sending emails out numerous times saying what I was doing, but, you know.
Yeah. Right. He's covering himself. He's backpedaling.
Hey, I'm a journalist. I'm allowed to. Robin Laws managed to sit down with Robin Laws for a while. Anyone who listens to the show also knows we're a big fan of his because he did Feng Shui.
He also did Trail of Cthulhu. Cthulhu. He did the Gumshoe system, which was a really good system.
My Ken Hite, who I did not sit down with this year.
I did get to talk to him, but I did not get to record him because my recorder was not working. I talked to him at the actual booth, and he's a very nice guy.
He's got a great voice for podcasting, great voice for radio.
Yes. Unlike me, who is like, he's like, hi, I'm Kenneth Hite.
Yes, what Nathan really doesn't know, we actually just edit out his voice every time.
So that's nice.
When we refer to this, imagine...
He also has that British accent.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So he always talks like this, which is always a great thing to hear on the radio.
Oh, man. What's up?
Food.
The International House of Couscous. Anyway, Gen Con, this year I think my overall impression of Gen Con was obviously looming at the show was the whole bankruptcy thing. There really wasn't any huge release, you know? I mean, 4th edition released about, you know, 4 months previous, approximately. It released in May. So it was there. There was a lot of 4th edition stuff going on, but because the WotC still hadn't ironed out anything with their GSL, only Goodman Games was really selling anything ironclad as 4th edition.
I heard lots of complaints about the 4th ed system, and it's understandable, and I understand where they're coming from.
They are revising the GSL. They haven't released the new GSL yet, but they're revising it. But really, other than that, there really wasn't anything overbearing at Gen Con. There wasn't anything there that was, you know, it's like, oh, this is the big new release. You know, you had Hunter the Vigil from White Wolf, but
We remember the original one.
We remember the original Hunter the Reckoning and going, oh, wow, that was a cool concept that sucked.
Which can't do a damn thing without the GM jumping in every few seconds
to save the players because the monsters in the World of Darkness series are horrible.
Like Hunter the Vigil, what they ended up doing was making it a lot more like the TV show Supernatural, which is what I was expecting the original game to be. But that's beside the point. I did talk to White Wolf briefly about it, and it sounds cool, but again, it's the new White Wolf system, and you know we're not big fans.
Well, that's just because...
WTF, right?
Yeah, it's just because the rewriting of the system seems to have taken a downward turn compared to the writing in the previous systems. Mm-hmm. It's not that there's anything wrong with White Wolf, because they do release stuff through another company for D20 stuff, and that stuff's fine. You know, some of it's good, some of it's bad, right. But you know, you're always going to have hit and miss in this industry. People are going to like some products, people aren't going to like others. But, you know, it's just the new rewriting on the World of Darkness stuff just doesn't interest us like the old stuff was. The old stuff, the old Werewolf book, the second edition revised.
Awesome book. The Apocalypse was awesome. I still have a copy of that.
The second edition, not the revised edition of Vampire, was supposedly really good, too. I never played Vampire, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, it was okay.
But the Mage the Ascension, was supposed to be incredible in the revised edition.
That's what Mage was. Mage was just funny.
It's like, I cast a spell. Oh, Paradox.
Well, no. It depended on your GM and depending on how stupid you were. But it was look amusing just because of how powerful you could get.
Yeah. What was the kind of paradox that you could have that was...
You could get tons of paradox.
Oh, gosh. I can't remember what they called it. It was like incidental paradox or something like that. The paradox that could happen of just basically...
reality rejecting what you're doing.
It was never detailed well enough in the book
to
sort of give you an idea of what the GM... It was sort of at the GM's discretion, and the way it sort of read was GM fiat paradox. And it was along the lines of, here I am inside my character's apartment, and I have to...
Now that's not good, though.
I have to, you know, hey, my character's a correspondence master, and I can teleport things long distances. Well, I need this gun, so I reach into a drawer and pull out this gun that's actually 30 miles away. And I have to make it look like I'm reaching into this drawer to pull it out when I could just have it appear in my hand.
Yeah, we never played it that way.
And I got a paradox for that.
Yeah, we never played it that way at all, because that was a waste.
Yeah, and I can't remember what they called it in the book. I don't have my book with me, but it was... I like Mage. I like Mage's system. And I hear Mage the Awakening is good, but again, it's the new White Wolf system.
Yeah.
But this isn't a review of the White Wolf game, so... But
we can can tell them.
This
what
is
we
our
think.
Loot bag episode, so we're all over the place.
Place,
right now.
Yeah.
But we're not big fans of the new White Wolf system. Fans of the old system, yes. Fans of the new system, not so much. But at Gen Con, I managed to play in a lot of stuff. Actually, I managed to play in a game of Spirit of the Century. Overall, my impression of... I can finally get this out here because I've read the book and I've now played the game and I've now run a character creation session of it. Which was fun. But I got to say, that was the most fun I've had using that system. Playing it... reading the book and then playing the game... while I was reading the book, the same thing kept popping in my head as I was reading the book, and it was completely quantified by playing the game, was... I can do everything with everything this game does, I can do with the feng shui system better. That's it. There is no way around it for me. It's like I can use the feng shui game system, mechanics, the books as they are, throw in the pulp flavor I want, and completely be able to run a pulp game without the clunkiness that is Spirit of the Century to me. And I've managed to... You can actually go on Evil Hat's website and download their character creation section from the book, so you can modify the character creation stuff for any game system you want for free. So honestly, that's what I've done. You can take that character creation and use it for whatever game system you want, and then use whatever game system works better. And, you know, a lot of people are out there going, ooh, you know, Spirit of the Century is so awesome, it's so great. But after playing it, I'm not horribly... impressed. So, gotta say, meh, Pez.
I actually got to play in a couple games at Gen Con too. I played in a 3.5 system game. I actually ran one in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Which is on
our websites under our actual play section.
Which was pretty much all my notes that I had were on my notebook and were lost. when we got to Gen Con. The files were bad. They were on my memory stick. Uh-huh. And so I had nothing going into the game. I improvised off the top of my head and out my ass.
Which happens. GM runs into improv.
Yeah.
I've had to do it numerous times.
I didn't like how the game went, but you know, there's not much I could do. There was not much I could do about it.
The key thing was just to have fun with it. Yeah. And because we knew it's a one shot, let's go with it. Now, we did get some email on that game and from our eighth pagan guy, the guy out in Britain.
Uh-huh.
Who runs gaming stories. He wanted to know what we were all on when we played that. But we were not on any illicit drugs of any kind.
No, it was just, for me, it was Aleve and the medication I take for my stomach problems. So, yeah.
But we had a good time. It was fun. And you can go to our actual play section on our website and listen to it. It's the Dungeons & Dragons Heroes of Zeros.
Yeah.
That's what I labeled it.
And pretty much it was zeros.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Now, I told everybody to make heroic-style characters that were funny, and unfortunately one of the players decided to make an evil character. Unbeknownst to me, he didn't actually run any ideas by me like everybody else did, so we got there, and we had one character who was systematically trying to kill everybody else in the game, which really disrupted the whole layout of the story.
Yeah, but like I say, ultimately it was a one-shot. We knew we weren't going to go back to that, and I ended up having a lot of fun with it, so...
Everybody said they had fun. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. I mean, it was just jokes and gags abound.
We played that. Then I also got to... I actually got to play Feng Shui for the first time in probably close to 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I didn't get to do that. I didn't even realize that was
I had a good
play.
Time. I played an everyman hero. Then I got to kill a big, nasty demon, big bruiser guy with a digital projector in one hit, sinking lots of fortune dice into it. And that was very entertaining. I played the bungling, you know, he does everything wrong, but things go right, everyman hero. So that was always fun.
Typical Jackie Chan character.
To that point, it was more, I was more modeling after Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little
China. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, can't do anything right, but he's really cocky, and things always tend to go his way. It was fun. I had a good time with that.
I don't doubt it. That sounds great.
I got to play, gosh, I have to think back now, we're thinking back 3 months. I got to play. I think I got to play some Mutes and Masterminds, maybe, possibly. I don't remember.
I thought you said you played it one you didn't like.
No, that was the year before that, or the 2 years before that, actually, because you weren't there the year. That was the one I played with Nathan and I played in, where we it was the 4-hour game session that lasted 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Sorry. I have a cat who's being obstinate.
He's always obstinate.
Yeah, he won't stop howling.
I still have my Gen Con schedule here. I can actually look at it and see what exactly I did. I headed up, I moderated a panel that is out on the feed for Intro to Podcasting. I played in a Feng Shui game, played in Nathan's game. And I did play a Mutants and Masterminds game, but for the life of me, I can't remember anything about it. So it must not have been very good.
Must not have been memorable in either a good way or a bad way.
I did play in the Spirit of the Century. Oh, and I did play after the podcaster meet and greet on Saturday night. We all went around, and I played in a board game called Pillars of the Earth, which was interesting. It was a bit too crunchy for me. It's a resource management game. Took like 3.5 or 4 hours to play the thing. So, you know, half a game of Arkham Horror. It wasn't bad, but it's not a game I'd rush out and buy. It's definitely not for my crew.
No, we'd get bored within 5 minutes of playing it.
Yeah. As far as interviews that I did, I know I talked to the Champions Online guys and the Hero Games guys. I was ironically stood up by the Warhammer Online Mythic Entertainment people. I showed up for my scheduled interview and the guy wasn't there. I hung around for 15 minutes and they weren't there, which is really amusing. For various reasons I can't go into on the air, but anyway, very amusing. I passed on my annoyance to their press people, and yeah. I did get to sit down. Nathan bugged me enough, and I went and sat down with the Alpha Omega guys at Mindstorm Labs.
They have a new product coming
out. With them. They're the Alpha Omega guys.
Did they decide to print it normal this time?
No. It's going to be in the same layout. I talked to them about that.
And I asked them about their choosing that format, and their way of describing it was their games are in widescreen.
Yeah.
So they have pretty deep feelings about it. They want it that way. So they
wanted a book that actually matched the cinematic style of the gameplay.
That's fair, right.
How they explained it. And I understood it, but the fact of the matter was, it just doesn't sit on the bookshelf.
They still put out a quality product. It's still a good game.
It is.
The first one that they put out looked neat. I just don't think I would play it. Is the problem.
Right. I went through character creation with it because I have the book here because Jeremy left it here. And the character creation is kind of fun.
Last I knew, you and Becca were taking turns flipping through it. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful book.
Yeah, the book is beautiful. The way you actually make characters is interesting. But the layout sucks. And I told them that when I talked to them. And they asked me why. I was like, look, I can't fit it on my bookshelf. And they're like, well, you can stand it up. I said, no. Then I don't know what book it is.
Yeah.
It's like, if I can't see what book it is, I'm going to ignore it on my bookshelf. I'm not going to care.
Yeah, and it's entirely an aesthetic thing, and we've talked about it when we reviewed it. I think it's a cool book, I think it's a cool game, but it being in its quote-unquote widescreen format just is really pretentious and annoying to me. But that's just me, really.
No, I agree.
This year... getting into that, there was the wonderful Annie Awards, which I am having an issue with the Annie Awards for various interior things that have been going on over there. But
did anything that we chose win? I didn't even pay attention.
A few things. We were spot on. Our best fan product went to dungeonmastering.com, which is a good website. A lot of the stuff we thought really would get it, got it. Some things just got it, I think, entirely for the fanboy aspect. Like the cover art went to that Pathfinder #1.
It was not the best
cover art. I mean, it's good artist, but man. And Scion God got the silver on it. Changeling was represented by the Changeling fan base.
Ooh, Changeling.
And it was very obvious that you had Paizo and White Wolf people voting a lot.
Nobody else could be buggered to do so.
Yeah. Trail of Cthulhu got silvers for like best writing, best rules, that sort of thing. I was impressed that Star Wars Saga won quite a few gold ennies for like rules. It got rules, it got best D20 product, and got best game. Really, product of the year went to Changeling. So I mean, the Changeling people were in mass. Here's the thing: the Gold Ennie for best electronic book went to The Book of Experimental Light 2. Now it's been released. Information has been released, obviously, about this. Actually, Book of Experimental Light 2 was released 6 days after the deadline for Ennie's consideration. So they knew this, the Ennies knew this apparently during their consideration and decided to ignore it for Experiment Light 2. They also decided to, this sort of is getting into my little rant on the Ennies, but they decided to condense all of their like electronic stuff and their fan stuff down into one category this year was fan product, and so like, there was no best podcast, there was no best fan site, that sort of thing. And they claimed that was because of lack of submissions. When really, the amusing thing is they needed at least 10 submissions from 10 different places, and that's fine for a category. That was the number they had. However, they insisted on people with electronic products had to burn their copies to a disc and send it in physically.
Why?
Which was really, really dumb. I'd say it continues to be really, really dumb. And
that's a waste of resources.
A lot of waste of resources. Because, I mean, I, I, I did it. I burned off 5 copies of Gamers Haven stuff. Actually, 6 copies because we had to send 6 copies in. Put them on discs and sent them to the 5 different places, including one in Canada.
You sent something to Canada?
Yeah, I sent some of our stuff to Canada because we love Canada.
We do love Canada, but still.
But still, yes. This was brought up when one of the Ennies judges, and I can't recall his name off the top of my head, decided to... let's see, Ennies judge Zachary Houghton decided to resign his position following private debates between the elected 2008 judges and the business manager on a number of topics. Now, he talks about this on his blog, as his Ennies judge blog. And some of the comments on there have greatly annoyed me as a podcaster in that he's bringing up the point that we do these electronic products, we should be able to just email a link to it, and that makes a lot of sense. Now, Ennies counters with the products, the excess products that they have, and any revenue and whatnot goes towards charity, and they think that they're saying if we are allowed to email things in, we should have to pay for our submissions. Well, my problem with that is a lot of podcasts don't make money.
Yeah, we don't have any money.
We don't make money off
this. And you can't compare us to, like, Malhavik Press or Green Ronin or places like that or Ronin Publishing that put out an RPG book for sale as a PDF because they're selling that. They're making money. We're putting out our product, for free. We do not get advertising money. We do not get anything of the sort from us. Any kind of money we get goes towards our hosting costs. Any kind of money we get is quickly eaten up by equipment and that sort of thing. We do this because we love it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for the gaming hobby.
Yeah, and also to mention the fact, well, some people come up and say, well, you guys have a Cafe Press store. Yeah, but if you look at the prices on our Cafe Press stuff, there's nothing.
We've sold nothing from the Cafe Press store to anyone but, like, me. So.
Can you pause it? Because I'm going to use the ice machine, and that's going to come over.
As I say, not as I do.
Here's my question about this, because I could care less about Ennies. Really, when it comes down to it, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
But here's my question about Ennies. Do they raise the sales of books that we know of, for a fact?
Well, they did the year before last for me, because there were several products that was the year before last
but
that were
we
so interesting that I actually went out and I purchased them.
My question is, how much do they affect... The actual sales of
books. If you listen to our Ennies show, the big thing this year we went on and on about was the lack of lack of impression that anything was making on it.
So. There was 2 books that were interesting and I wanted to pick them up at Gen Con, but I never found the company booths.
The thing that I would rather have than an award system is just more and more things like podcasts and other things that allow you to get the products out without a large expense to the people making these books.
Yeah,
one thing is just one way, but I'm just curious.
And perhaps
how much it raises the
I would say we should just do our own little awards every year. I'd be happy with that. But really, what's the point?
Yeah, there's really no point.
because we're a small little podcast, no one's going to care.
My thing is just reviews.
The thing is this: a lot of people who game do a lot of internet stuff now, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are, 4 major search engines. There's Google, there's Yahoo, there's MSN, and there's, what's it called? It's either Ask Jeeves or Lycos. I can't remember what the top 4 are, but...
It used to be Ask Jeeves, but now it's... I don't know.
Ask.com.
It's really all...
But the top 3 are MSN, Google, and Yahoo. Google being the number 1, followed very closely by Yahoo and MSN. I'm not sure which one's number 2. But... all 3 of those places have the ability to do news as well. Why is it that they're not actually covering products like that? I mean, that's most people's home pages.
Oh, yeah.
And my home page is Google. And I have a secondary setup as Yahoo because I have email through Yahoo because I've had email through Yahoo since as long as I can remember. I always start when I go to the internet on both of those sites. If they had something up somewhere, entertainment, under entertainment, role-playing games. I would be interested to go look at products.
But is there any advertising money in it?
Well, that's the question.
I don't know how much, other than Watsy.
But there could be attention drawn to products that way.
Right.
Well, true, but how much money from all these companies? Watsy is huge. I mean, they have Hasbro behind them. Mm-hmm. They can do a lot more. And I don't know. It's always bothered me how underground And even really, in this day and age, gaming is.
I mean, the other awards things that are out there, I mean, you have the Origins Awards, which have gone up and gone down, and really its current state is sort of okay. With you have the Parsec Awards, which is more broad.
I've never even heard of them.
And then there's another one. I can't remember the name of it now, but really it's a lot of stuff. And, you know, we like patting ourselves on the back, but a point I'm trying to make, I guess, is there's the Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. You have the Academy Awards. You have the Emmys for TV. I think there should be something for gaming, and I think it should be as prestigious as that. You know, I mean, there should be some. The Origins Award for a while was like that, but not anymore. The Emmys sort of were going that route, but really now they're just really, really becoming a popularity contest, and it's not fun. I think it should be granted for quality and that sort of thing.
Really kind.
But, you know, long story short, I think that's Gen Con. Gen Con in a nutshell for me was meeting some fun people, did meet some fans, met some great podcasters again, met some people I only get to see once a year. It was my escape from life for 4 days, and I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. Overall, I hope I can go next year. We'll see.
Well,
depends on the finances, you know. So
the economy the way it is, we'll see if there is one.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, Gen Con is still doing the bankruptcy thing, and they're still dealing with that, although they did announce they had a record turnout this year for Gen Con.
I did not realize they were doing a bankruptcy.
Yeah, they're finally
chapter 7 reorganization, and it's because of a lawsuit that LucasArts is suing.
I seem to remember that lawsuit. But what was it about?
Gen Con LLC also does the Star Wars Celebration.
Oh yes.
And there's some other things, but stemming from the last Star Wars Celebration in Los Angeles, apparently Gen Con had not sent money to the charity yet for, I think it was Make-A-Wish Foundation or something. They decided to, they hadn't sent that money yet, but they had every intention of it, from what we've been told. But Gen Con basically filed for a restructuring saying, basically, we have this amount in debt that we need to pay. We have enough to pay it. We just need to free up the money to do it. That's where they're at, and they managed to get a stay so they could still do Gen Con. They canceled... basically, they have started licensing out the Gen Con name to other shows around the world. They canceled Gen Con SoCal, and they basically went ahead and did Gen Con Indy, and that was their big show. And they pulled it off without a hitch. I mean, they had, I don't remember the exact numbers they sent us, but they had a lot of people there.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people there.
It was the biggest turnout for Gen Con ever, so... They had more people turn us out. The one big complaint I've heard, the one big complaint I have is they did not do the family discount thing on that Sunday. They did it last year. They didn't do it this year. I think that's a mistake. They should get that back to get more families in. But
yeah, you know, I agree.
Obviously, one of the big things this Gen Con was the Gary Gygax tribute. There was the ginormous die that sold for $1,500
really?
At the
that's
auction,
cool.
The charity auction for. The charity auction for Fisher House. Oh, yes, the story for the Gen Con auction.
It was originally going to go to...
Originally, the charity was supposed to go to the Christian Children's Fund in honor of Gary Gygax, because it was Gary Gygax's charity of choice.
Mm-hmm.
However, they made arrangements to raise money and give it to, you know, the Christian Children's Fund. And the Christian Children's Fund then found out that some of this money was going to come from proceeds from Dungeons and Dragons sales.
Which we play the evil music at this point.
That they say, quote, was tainted by D&D. Meaning, and they then declined to take this money.
Stupid.
They went to Fisher House, which does a lot of stuff for armed forces and other, and you know, homeless,
who
all that.
Money?
And I'm sure that discussion was along the lines of, "Hello, Fisher House. Christian Children's Fund doesn't want this money. Do you guys want it?" And the Fisher House went, "They said what?"
Yeah. We don't care if it's been tainted by that. We'll take that. We'll be fine. So yeah, so you can head over to the Gen Con auction website and check out their little discussion about that. But it actually got national news. So Christian Children's Fund sort of got boned on that. They're idiots about that.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be a good charity too. So yeah, come on, guys.
But they didn't want it because it'd been tainted by
the tainted.
Well, the whole charity auction raised something like $40,000 or something. It raised a lot. There were some incredible things. I saw the Gary Gygax die go up for auction.
Yeah. Oh, but it was filmed. It's on YouTube.
Yeah. I was actually in the room when they were doing it. I bid on it. I bid $50 on it.
Yeah. Well, they started the bidding. They had everybody put their bidder card up at $1.
And I stayed up till $50.
Yeah. It didn't last very long. It went up to $50. It went $1, $25, $50.
$100, and then it went to, and then someone went $1,000 because no one was really.
It actually it stalled at about $825, and then Gary Gygax's son came up and told a bit of a story, and they sort of pushed the crowd a bit more, and someone bid $1,000, and then it peaked out at $1,500, and it was actually really emotional. It was really cool that people were willing to put that much money into it.
How big of a dice was it?
About 9 foot across.
Yeah, it was a giant D20 that had a hole in the eight, and people were throwing dice into it because it was hollow. And it was the Gygaxian
20.
D20, the Gygaxian dice stuff.
That would have been nice on the front yard.
But let me see.
It was made out of foam.
It was very well done. It was a nice blue die, if I remember correctly.
But to give you the lowdown, I'm going to it's livegameauctions.com is their website. The amount raised at the Gen Con 2008 auction was $17,398 for Fisher House Foundation.
That's cool. I thought it was a lot more than that.
Nope, $17,398. The huge 20-sided die sold for $1,500. You can see an event for it at YouTube. But yes, when the Christian Children's Fund found out that the money would come partially from sales of D&D, they decided not to be the sponsored charity. Instead, Fisher House Foundation went, "We'll do it!" And they now have $17,398
They
donate comfort homes built on the grounds of major military and VA medical centers. So that's what Fisher House
does. You at least have to say that good old Christian, Children's Fund stood on their,
Their morals
and didn't accept money from. Mm-hmm.
To give you an idea, in the difference here, Gen Con 2007 charity auction went to Crystal House. They only raised $9,800. So this year they raised almost double that to $17,000. So good for them.
Awesome. It was the most people I've ever seen in the auction house ever.
It was very cool. It was very, very cool. But that, I mean, really, that's what Gen Con was for me in a nutshell. I was just proud to be amongst so many cool people. It was a lot of fun.
I was trying to get an interview with the people that did the auction, and we could never get chance to work. They're so busy.
They're so busy.
Constantly.
I mean, they're insanely busy. We need to help them with their computers at some point, because, man.
No. I wanted to send them a bunch of the computers I have in the basement, but I was fiddling around with them, and most of them weren't on Windows XP.
Ah, sad.
Yeah, so. Unfortunately, that's not going to work for them. They need computers that run XP.
Yeah, if you have any old computers that might run Windows XP or will run Windows XP, check out GenConLiveAuctions.com or just, LiveAuctions.com and talk to those people, see if they want them, because they need more.
They don't need monitors. They just need towers.
Just need towers.
If you've got an old tower,
yeah,
let them know.
But all in all, Gen Con, big success, a lot of fun. Nothing blew me away at the con. Saw a lot of cool costumes, got a lot of cool pictures. The gallery is up. It reminds me I need to get pictures from you guys so I could put that on the website.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was Gen Con. I know we sort of went on and on about it, but that's Gen Con. we'll take a bit of a short break here, and we'll be back.
Construction update, Stardate 0802.3.
Commander Hamilton working through fistfulofcomics.com to get you official information on the upcoming Star Trek movie. Using links on our site, you can go to the official Paramount site, download trailers and icons. Every time you link through us, we get more information, which we will be passing on to you. www.fistfulofcomics.com/Star Trek. Boldly go. Go off.
All right. Well, we're back in our wonderful loot bag episode. And I think maybe now we can talk about, you know, actually loot and stuff. As well as some other things, but, you know, Goodman Games has been sending us tons and tons of stuff, as have Paizo.
And a lot of it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Also, we could talk about some of the stuff we actually brought back from Gen Con, I guess.
Yes. Unfortunately, I can't find a couple books. I got a PDF printout of something from Trail of Cthulhu. It was one of the books that was... It was not a full book. It was part of a book that was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Something to do with the... I think it was with the Esoterists, but I've misplaced it. The other thing I got was I got from Goodman Games, I got the actual, one of the X game adventures for the Coney Island Crawl, which I read through, and I read the whole adventure from front to back, mm-hmm. and was actually really impressed with it.
And that's for X Crawl, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was actually a really good one, and I've misplaced it. I know it's in the house somewhere, because I brought it home. Where it's at now, I don't know. I was also given a book by a man by the name of Jeff Poutre. I think I'm afraid I'm mispronouncing that. It's French. It might be Poutre. It's a book of short stories written by various different gaming creators called Of Dice and Pen. I've read it from front to back twice now. The short stories in it are very well done. A lot of them are really short. They're real short stories. Good book. Highly recommend it to anybody who wants a bunch of short stories by game creators. This is the book to check out, even if you're just curious at the writing skills.
Let's see real quick here. There's Trail of Cthulhu, Stunning Eldritch Tales. There's the Trail of Cthulhu Player's Guide coming out. Foreshadow. Oh, that's music. Shadows Over Filmland. That's all still music.
No, I think this was a Gumshoe system book. It had to do with the Esoterists.
Okay.
Which are who?
It's another Gumshoe book. The Esoterists.
But I got to talk to Kenneth Hype.
Esoterists.
Very nice guy. He actually elucidated for me what skill you're supposed to use for breaking indoors. Because there is no actual skill for forcing.
Esoterists, Book of Unremitting Horror, Profane Miracles, Six Pact, Albion's Ransom, the Esoterra Fact Book.
It was the Esoterra Fact Book, I think.
Okay.
Which is out now.
So what skill do you use?
It's not out yet.
Use the athletics skill.
It's not out
that
yet.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
The Esoterra Factbook is not out yet.
It's not out yet?
No.
But you use the athletics skill, actually, which makes sense. But, you know, when you look at the book, you're like, there's no skill for breaking a door open. You know, like, how the hell do I break open a door?
Can't.
So I asked him about it, because it's like, you mm-hmm. know, there's a lockpicking skill. There's, you know, the skill to destroy locks with demolition. But how do you force a door open with pure strength?
Doors are impossible.
He says, you use athletics. I was like,
yeah.
You might want to, when you reread the book, you might want to put an addendum next to the athletic skill. Use this skill for forcing doors open, because everybody I've talked to that played the game had the same problem I did, was there's no skill listed for breaking
doors,
open doors, and they
can't
hated it.
Break them open! Mm-hmm. They're impossible!
Yeah, but you can.
Damn you to hell!
And it just goes to the point that some of us aren't smart enough to realize which skill actually works with, and I am guilty of that. Because I looked at it as like, there's no skill.
That's fine.
That sucks. But, yeah, I also got... I talked to Christopher Clark of Inner City Game Designs. You might know him for the stuffed animal board game, where you use basically use stuffed animals or plastic Little Green Army Men.
Is that Critter Commandos?
Yeah, Critter Commandos.
Critter Commandos?
Yeah.
Right.
There's the other one. It's like green, Little Green...
I know
fun?
Which one you're talking about.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Fun? They're fun. I actually picked up. I actually bought this. He was willing to give it to me, but I felt I would support his company, and actually buy a copy. I bought a game called Exploring the Depths of Uranus, which is of course a play on words about the butt.
And, Fuzzy Heroes.
Yes, Fuzzy Heroes.
That's the game.
And is a play on the joke of a butt. And the picture on the front is supposed to show the planet Uranus, which looks like a butt.
Yes.
It's got little signs pointed to things like called the crack. and site of archaeological dig SD-2413, which is shown like along what looks like a cheek. And there's one right in the middle. It says unexplored crater, and the artwork for it is play on the butt. But when you actually play the game has nothing to do. It's actually exploring the planet Uranus, and it's a tactical game. You have to build up your resources and stuff. Then you fly to the planet and you do
the other one there that studies. You're thinking of is VLC, very large creature.
Yeah,
that they do.
I actually I picked up a copy of this game from a young man from Canada. Called Juggernaut, which is a really fast-paced, really cool card game. Mm-hmm. And he gave us permission to actually film it, us playing the card game and putting it up online. I'll see if we can't find a link to his actual website. He has it for sale online. I have a first edition printing, which I don't think there are any left now.
We could do a silent film.
Yeah. Imagination yes. Games is the name of the...
We'll do it like German Expressionists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Black and white and
yes.
Silent.
Where actually, I played this game and I went back the next day with my... I had a budget per day. I went back with my budget the next day and bought a copy. He sold out of all the copies he had at Gen Con, if I understand correctly. He had about 50 because they wouldn't let him take any more through customs.
Oh, yeah.
Without charging him a tax?
No, there was 50. You were only allowed to bring so many into the country.
That's pretty funny.
I apologize. I'm not pronouncing your name right. I'm sure you can send me an email with the actual pronunciation of the name.
Uh-huh.
He also gave me a copy of this card game called Food Fight, which is fun. The problem is though is it's if you have less than like four people, it's uh-huh. not fun because you get two attacks and you basically just beat the living daylights out of each other too quickly. But with like four more people, I think it does up to like eight.
There's some games that are like that, sadly.
With like eight people, this game would be great fun because you just pick on everybody. I picked up a copy of HARP, which is the High Adventure Role-Playing System.
Mm-hmm.
Role-playing, which is what the old Middle-Earth role-playing game.
Yeah, not to be confused with MERP.
The MERP system was based off of the original, and this is the new version,
HARP,
which has been
from ICE, Iron Crown Enterprises, is back.
Yes, they went bankrupt because they lost mm-hmm. the license to MERP, to Middle Earth.
I think many years ago, Iron Crown also used to put out the Hero Game stuff years ago, I think.
Is it diceless?
No, it's not diceless.
Thank God. Diceless is wrong.
It is greatly streamlined from the old version. Mm-hmm.
There's not, like, four bajillion tables anymore?
No, there's not four bajillion tables. There's still tables.
So what is the background of the...
It's not Gate War.
Yeah. It's a generic fantasy war.
I failed my breathing check.
Adventure. Not a lot of magic. And it's heavy combat-oriented. But you have the ability to do skills that are not combat-oriented in, like, some of the newer games that are coming out. But... Just to give you an idea, it's more streamlined than the old version, but the character sheet is still two full pages at, like, type font 8. So the character sheet is still very complex, and the character creation still
Not quite as bad as a tax form.
No, but it's still pretty. It's still considerably more advanced than, like, D&D.
There are some character sheets I've seen out there that are as boring as a tax form.
And I wanted to give it
a shot. Not to give it a stab, but, you know, Blue Planet, great game. Character sheet was like a tax form.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Phil at Tabletop, who got me a copy of the Pathfinder beta, and he got it to me for actually a good price. I wasn't charged the $25 for it.
No, it's because Tabletop Game and Hobby
is awesome.
Located in Overland Park at 103rd Street is awesome.
Yeah. But
go there and spend money now.
Yes.
Do it now.
Make sure that he stays safe through the recession. We want him to stick around. He'll be the last company to go, but I don't want it to come down to that.
I don't want him to go anyway.
Yeah. I've read through the book. It's like the Player's Handbook and the DMG put into one with a bunch of extra features and tweaks done to the character classes and stuff. There's supposed to be two new classes coming out, but they're not in the book, and I didn't see any reference to them, but I've been hearing that they're releasing a Swashbuckler class and a new Magic class for the system. Haven't seen anything on it. It's just rumors that I've heard.
And just to clarify, that's Tabletop Game and Hobby at 6840 West 105th Street, Overland Park, Kansas, 913-962-4263.
Yes.
We're not affiliated with them in any way.
But they are the best gaming store in Kansas.
You better go spend your money there. I mean, yes.
Or we will kick you square in the nuts.
But I picked that up.
If you have them.
It looks interesting. I'm interested to run a game in the setting. I'm still waiting patiently to play a fourth edition game, which I understand you're going to run like one of the pre-generated adventures for us after
once,
we finish.
Once Andre's game. Done with his, I'll run a. I'll probably run one of the. Actually, one of the stuff. One of the Goodman Games products they sent to us. Either most likely, I'll probably run another one of the two Dungeon Crawl classics that is not that I'm not running for my brother's crew.
The Death.
There's
the
either
Cycles of Death,
Forges of the Mountain King, or Isle of the Sea Drake.
The Pit of Despair.
Oh, yes.
And Destruction.
Yes, yes. Anyone listening to our actual play? No, we've been doing the Sellswords of Punjar.
Oh, God.
Where we've had one character actually die and be resurrected, and the party has been defeated entirely once and is now having to restart. So, and go back in to the wonderful Sellswords of Punjar. So
that's a tough adventure, huh?
Well, it's a dungeon crawl.
It's nearly
and they
impossible.
All got horribly, horribly mutilated by several things. Yes, they got ransomed off in the last game. So, yeah, they got captured, ransomed off, and now are wanting their vengeance. and yet they keep coming back for more. I'm rather impressed. Goodman Games sent us a big stack of stuff, and not to mention just the Dungeon Crawl Classics stuff, Isle of the Sea Drake, and Forges of the Mountain King.
Ooh.
They also sent us a copy of the DM campaign record, which is just for organize. I would say it's for a primer on organizing as a DM and keeping a campaign record. It's not very useful for me, in other words, because I'm already fatally inattentive. I am trying to use it for Sellswords, but I haven't really touched it too much.
And I noticed it's like got four things in it. But
yeah, they also sent us several copies of the Character Codex, which is their big character sheet.
Here, let me see. They sent us several copies?
They sent us one copy, and I asked for several for the Sellswords game.
Because you're running through characters left and right.
Well, I wanted all the six people playing, I wanted them to be able to use the as much Goodman Games product as possible.
This holds
it's a big
one,
character sheet.
This holds one character sheet. For,
yeah.
Wow, that's not a bad price.
It's not bad, but it's a lot of the stuff, it's very quickly put together, and it's very obvious that it's quickly put together.
There's some things in the character one that I'm not too...
There are a few tweaks
sure
I would do with it. I find the character ones are handy. I honestly, one thing that I would really love for them to do is three-hole punch it.
Yeah.
So you could put it into another folder or put it in a binder. Because we use power cards so much for D&D 4th edition, and it makes so much more sense to do it that way.
At least until they tell us we can't.
I'd like to see like a place for power cards, or at least like a folder flap or something like that.
Yeah, that might be something they could do in the front is actually add a folder flap to the inside so you can put the power cards inside.
The GM one they sent was nice.
The GM record? I've got a copy of it right there.
Actually, the character codex is pretty neat. I like that.
They're priced at $5.
Yeah,
nice. Which is a good price. Again, thanks very much to Goodman Games for sending us copies of it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll try to use and test anything.
We're testing it out as much as possible. They also sent us a copy of Dragora's Dungeon, their Master Dungeons, the new Master Dungeon series, whereas Dungeon Crawl Classics is much more about kicking in doors and killing monsters. Master Dungeons is for the more experienced game master, and I will try to run this at some point. But it's more in line. It is 4th edition, and it is much more in line with thinking more 4th edition than anything else. I think the cover art is Clyde Caldwell, and I like him, but I think the picture sucked.
Yeah,
I'm supposed to give this back.
And it's pretty clear that the woman on the cover actually used bikini waxes.
Really? Let me see.
Yeah. That's pretty...
Whoa!
Yeah.
That's I'm sorry, guys. Goodman Games, we love you. But that picture is like borderline, pornographic to me, and it really reminds me of the Avalanche Press stuff. And if you've listened to the show, you know what we call them. It's the role-playing game. But the DM campaign record really isn't something I'm going to use much. Friction. It sucks. But the other stuff they sent us, they obviously sent us copies of... PC Pearls, which is a collection of character inspiration. It's PC Pearls and I think Points of Light are both for their generic stuff.
Yeah.
Is there systemless stuff where you can use it for anything? PC Pearls is interesting. It gives you some sort of pointers for character creation, and I think it's definitely a good thing for first time players. Points of Light is campaign ideas and location ideas.
They sent us all this?
Yeah.
Damn.
They sent us a stack of stuff. They're in there sending us more stuff. They're great. They also sent us a PDF copy of Punjar, the Tarnished Jewel, which was their free RPG day.
Is that the one that's murdering us?
No, that's Sellswords of Punjar. Punjar, it's the
Punjar
it's
is a book setting.
That's more about the setting, and which is part of their Aerith setting for Dungeon Crawl Classics.
The murder house is what we should call it.
No, we should really more appropriately the charnel house.
The charnel house.
Yes.
Oh,
I like these books. These books are cool.
They keep coming back, you know. And also, I just showed this to everybody, the random esoteric creature generator just got sent to us.
Yeah, that
thing is cool. Which is a systemless game made for fantasy role-playing games and modern simulacra. It's a collection of lots of random tables to basically generate a monster from scratch. It gives you guidelines for making their modes of movement, what they look like, how many eyes, arms, etc., 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 what special abilities they have. We're talking like there was like a D. There's a table in here where you roll two sets of percentile dice and add them together. So you have a D200 something, you know. It's interesting. I want to play around with it actually. I think it'd be great for a generator of some kind.
It'd be great for my game system, considering I don't use ordinary monsters in my D&D games.
And it's. You know me, I'm always a fan of playing stuff that, you know, you could even say take a monster out of the monster manual, then read it, make it look different, you know. I'm always a fan of that. And it's interesting. Random esoteric creature generator for Goodman Games.
I don't wear pants. Ah.
This, Jeremy is looking at the Master Dungeons, Jagora's Dungeon book.
And with horror on his face. Abject horror. And I don't blame him, because...
But, looking...
censored bar.
Just sort of looking through the Jagora's Dungeon module, it actually looks like a very solid module.
The book itself seems cool.
The module itself looks very good. I'm just not a big fan of the cover art.
I might have to cover that up.
Yes, that's...
Because it just looks painful.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, we'll set that down.
But I gotta say,
we'll set that down, cover down.
As an offset, though, the PC Pearls, that picture's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that is pretty cool with the guy wearing the skull.
PC Pearls is a companion book to their other book we don't have called GM Gems, which is just sort of tips and tricks about GMing, and this is tips and tricks about being a better player.
I might need that GM Gems book.
You can get them all as PDF.
I'll probably pick up a copy of it, because, you know, I need all the help I can get when it comes to GMing.
Yeah, you suck. The other stuff they sent us, I've just got a little list here. They did. I think we have talked about it, but they sent us a copy of Eldritch, which Jeremy has, and he has reviewed. And then there's Punjar, the Tarnished Jewel. They will continue to send us some stuff, and I think since we're doing Sellswords of Punjar... the Punjar is actually going to be a trilogy of books.
Which is fine. We can continue. I
read through most of the PDF versions of Pathfinder that we were sent by Paizo.
That was the other thing, is Paizo sent us a ton of stuff.
Ton of stuff from PDF, too.
They sent us some more wonderful Planet Stories books.
Oh, yes.
Jeremy and Nathan have been clawing their way through. I'm in the middle of another book, though, so I can't...
I will review the Gary Gygax Infernal Sorceress today, because I'm finished with it.
Real quick, I've been reading... The Stephen Pressfield book Gates of Fire, which is a novelization of the 300 of 300, basically of the fight at Thermopylae. Really good historical fiction book. Really good book. Check it out.
I'll borrow that after you.
But we got a bunch of Planet Story stuff from Paizo.
See, Planet Story is,
which is the pulp stuff.
The stories are fun. Some of them are good. Some of them are not so much.
Yeah,
but they're just fun. And I also like that you can get an actual subscription to this if you really want to.
I liked the Anubis murders.
The Anubis murders is sweet.
Yeah, and the follow up book. Yeah, was really good. But Jeremy had that
Samarkand
something
solution.
Yeah,
which is also sweet.
Which Jeremy, I actually read it from Jeremy because I don't know if it's actually out in these books yet.
I will check.
You know it is, because I read Inheritus and Gary Gygax.
Yes. Yeah. That was a really cool book. I know there's a third one in the series, but I haven't read that one yet. I'm reading Almeric, and the last one I read was the one that Jeremy let me borrow, which was the one with the blue giants on Mars.
Yeah.
What was that one called?
Well, let's see. The book's out for... Obviously, there's the Anubis Murders, and then I think... Did you buy that one?
One of them, yeah.
So I think that's the only one we haven't really been sent, because we have City of the Beast.
Yes, that was City of the Beast.
That was an awesome
City of the Beast, Black God's Kiss.
Black God's Kiss, at first you read it and you're like, this is cool, mm-hmm. and then you realize how sexist that book is.
Yeah. Elak of Atlantis.
That one was terrible.
Oh, God, I hated that book.
Right.
I did not like that story.
The Secret of Shin-Hurat.
He was a dick.
Actually, The Secret of Shin-Hurat was fun.
I have not read that one yet.
That one mm-hmm. was fun.
Northwest of Earth.
Haven't read that.
Which is the Complete Northwest Myth. That was one of the ones they sent us.
So I'll read that later.
El Murek is one of the ones they sent us.
I'm reading that now. It's pretty cool so far, but it's Robert Howard, so.
Yeah. Lord of the Spiders. I don't think they sent us that one yet.
I don't think we got that one yet.
And it's Michael Moorcock, actually.
Is it?
Moorcock is
The other Gary Gygax one is the Samarkand Solution.
Yeah.
That's the other one, and that one's really good, too. I like that character in there. Yeah, him and his female counterpart did pretty sweet.
Yeah, he's the Sherlock Holmes.
Let's see. They sent us...
Yeah. And he's rude. That's the thing. He's like, well, he's not super nice.
Rude.
He's right.
Straight. Well, he's the... Basically, he used to work for the Pharaoh, so he's the head of the secret service of the Pharaoh, and he can do whatever the hell he wants. And he knows it.
Yeah, but he's awesome. He's just like, I'm not concerned about your problem. You're just like,
did they send us Infernal Sorceress?
Yeah, that's the one I read.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Which I'll be...
That's another great guy, next one, right?
I'm just curious if that's...
Hounds of Skaith, I think they sent us.
Well, he has another one that just has a thief. These are two thieving friends.
Yeah, the story in here by Gary Gygax is about that specific thief. Because apparently he wrote a series of books about him, and I haven't actually read them. But why don't we get you?
There's water everywhere now.
Here, there you go. Use that to set your cup on, so you don't have to worry about getting water all over your book.
Yeah, they're up through the Swordsman of Mars is the newest
one. That's another
one
I enjoyed.
I have not read that one.
So, and Worlds of Their Own.
The Worlds of Their Own is also good. I'm reading.
Masters of the Pit.
In the middle of that one, I don't know about that one yet.
Another Michael Moorcock.
He's the guy that also wrote City of the Beast, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is it a fall?
City of the Beast?
Yeah. I thought.
Let me check. Yes, Michael Moorcock. He's the guy who's done the Elric of Melonbone or Melnibone or whatever the hell you... Elric.
Yeah, Gore the Thief.
Is a series
he
of
taught, they taught
Or I've also heard it Melnibone, but...
Melnibone?
Whatever.
However,
the Elric stuff.
Which is supposed to be really good.
The other Gary Gygax one is Death in Delhi.
Yeah, that's the other one that I want.
Yeah.
Comes out in December.
We'll wait patiently for that one.
I will read it, and I will review it. But mm-hmm. I recommend these just as an actual...
Yeah, I haven't read any of them yet, so...
Yeah, just get a subscription to it. I mean, really. Then they'll send you, I think it's one or two, and it's you save on it. It's at a Paizo.
You'll receive monthly volumes at 20% off the cover price.
Yeah, and so. I think they're worth it for anybody who likes fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah, they're $12.99 a piece.
And
yeah.
pulp. They have a very good pulp feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're supposed to have, and they look very cool.
They give you ideas outside of the box for games.
Yeah, it's definitely good inspiration.
And also, the nice thing about Gary Gygax's books, they're always Earth-based.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a different Earth, but it's Earth-based.
Right.
So you can actually... You know the places he's talking
about.
Yeah,
you identify with the locations
of
the
story. But for Fantasy Field, you still understand that why are there monsters in this world? Because they come from somewhere else. That type of thing. It's kind of cool.
Plus, Paizo sent us a mountain of Pathfinder stuff.
Yeah, I've been working my way through it. They sent us PDF copies of every
like
Pathfinder
everything
book.
They've ever done. So we've got a lot of stuff to look through for Paizo and real big thanks. I want to take a moment to say thanks to Paizo, to Goodman Games, to Asmodee Editions, people who take time out to send us a good amount of stuff.
Mindstorm Labs, who
sent us Alpha Mega, will be sending us a copy of their monster book.
The creatures mm-hmm. and something.
Which, if somebody else runs it, I'll probably try it.
Yeah,
and I want to say, you know, I really want to say thanks to those guys for having the faith in us to take a look at their product and basically taking the time out to let us take a look. So,
and we also should say thank you to everyone else that we actually don't know right off the top of our heads the names of the companies too. I do want to thank Jeff
from Iron Crown Enterprises for all the information they gave me and the products that he handed to me for review. And I want to thank Christopher Clark for sitting down and talking with me for almost an hour about Gary Gygax, which was a very interesting and enlightening conversation. I wish I had caught it on the recorder, but the recorder stopped recording about 15 minutes into that actual interview when I actually finished. The button was still, it was still said it was recording, but when we actually, when I actually looked at the recording, it stopped after 15 minutes.
Again, we're podcasters. We have no money. We have to make do with what we have. And I had the actual digital voice recorder.
And yeah, he had the digital voice recorder, and I was using my crappy little Sansa, which actually records fairly well.
Yes, it does when it works.
When it works. But I think I lost three interviews because
if you want to send us new digital voice recorders, go right ahead.
I'm quite willing to,
but
you know,
I can't afford to spend $80 on two more of those.
I'll gladly sell out.
Oh yeah, we're gonna sell out no matter what. But
yeah,
you know, we're not going to sell out because we are gonna sell out someday. totally sell out. We'll sell the whole Gamers Haven thing for a bag of beans. I don't care. Okay, not really a bag of beans. Have to be magic beans. Yeah, they're not magic beans. No deal.
Beans that are worth about $2 million each.
No,
that would be 20 awesome.
Bags.
$20 a piece. With $20 a piece would be not bad.
Screw you,
as long as we got
$2 million dollars each bean. A bag of 20 each.
You know what? If you're interested in buying Gamers Haven, email me, and I'll we'll work something out, and I just won't tell them about it. Now, we're
you know
a part
where
of Gamers Haven. Gamers Haven is not going anywhere,
unless there's $2 million.
Yes, but really, I mean,
we'll stop recording the, $2 million.
I did mention Asmodee. Asmodee sent us
For each of us.
Sent us some copies of
$2 million each.
$2 million each? Well, hell yeah!
Never have to hear our voices again.
I'm sure they're like, we'll just give you $2 million to give to Nathan to get him to shut the hell up.
Okay, I'll give him $1 million. Oh wait.
Asmodee Productions.
Yes. Asmodee is another company that sent us some stuff, although not as horribly impressed with the stuff they did send us. We do thank them very much for sending us stuff. And
what did they send us?
As soon as their website loads, I'll let you know what they sent us.
I still want to play that diving game that you got.
That was from Paizo. Key Largo.
Yes.
It's not a bad game. It's fun.
I was reviewing, going back through the Age of Gods board game, and actually, I think for an evening, it might be fun.
Hero IK is what they sent. And they're interesting. You played that Adventurer card game, right?
Yes.
It's like that, but only for two players. That was my big problem with it, is it's only for two players.
Well, the Adventurer game, you can play up to four.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost bought that, too.
I don't get why a lot of people... The art in the books were great. They have made great counters for D&D 4th edition. But...
Whoa.
Hey,
maybe
I'm going to be honest. But the Adventurer card game and with this Hero IK thing is three different sets, but they're for two players only. And my problem I have with it is it's only for two players, and I don't see why a lot of people go nuts about, oh hey, finally a two player game. Well, I'd like two player on up would be great.
Yeah.
Because how many times do you get together with one other person just to play a card game?
Doesn't normally happen unless it's like, oh, let's play Call of Cthulhu.
Usually it's I get together and I'm with a friend and their significant other, or it's, you know, two other couples or whatever. It's usually three or more people, it's come on. Two player games, I think, just aren't in the cards anymore. They sent us copies.
Magic
of that.
And the Call of Cthulhu card games have rules for adding more than two people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it's fine production quality. But really, guys, I gotta say, come on, give me some. You know, where's the more than two player action?
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? Yes. Say. Where's the beef?
You know, there was a game we talked about a long time ago. It was supposed to be a monster game. And I was... over lunch, I stopped by a very... I'm not going to tell you the name of the store because nobody likes it. But anyway, I stopped by.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
And
I walked in and they have...
He's not talking about Tabletop Game and Hobby.
No,
located
he's
at
talking about Place in Lawrence.
Yes.
But anyway,
which is the
they have
go to Tabletop Game and Hobby. It's much better.
It's just like the randomized D&D minis, which I hate.
But this one's kind of funny, because they're monsters.
Yeah, Ethan picked a copy of it up at JCon.
You can now get different monsters for that game.
Oh, is it? It's the Privateer Press new game,
yes.
Monsterpocalypse.
Yeah, it looks funny.
That is fun.
It is fun. The issue I have with it is the starter sets are $20, and the starter sets are only for one player.
That's sad.
So if you want to play it with one other person, you got to spend $40 out the gate. And it's fun, and it's randomized, and it's a collectible game.
I hate randomized.
And I
but I was so tempted to just buy one booster.
Joining the let's get out of collectibles thing is Wizards of the Coast announced they are ceasing ceasing support of the skirmisher rules for the D&D minis. Their D&D minis are going non-randomized next year.
Which I'll be damned.
So awesome.
Now we can get a pack of like 20 goblins that we need for the game. Well, it'll be a pack of five goblins, but you know, something that's actually multiples of the same monster that you're going to run into a crap ton of them, so you don't have to buy like 40 boxes of randomized miniatures to get the three kobolds.
Maybe I can actually get a beholder.
You still don't have a beholder?
No, I want a freaking beholder. But guess what? I can't get a beholder because I have to buy 20 different packs that are randomized, and I'm not buying an individual beholder.
Because they're like
freaking
expensive.
I don't know if they're 40, but they're ridiculous. That's all that really matters. They're ridiculously priced.
Yeah. And beholders are something that adventurers commonly run into.
Screw that! I'll put it on my desk at work. I don't care. I just want a beholder.
Well, the funny thing was, is you got the
I got Tiamat, the first pack.
Yeah,
the first big pack I bought.
You got Tiamat.
It was a giant spider, and I'm like, a Tiamat. Sweet.
On his first box.
Yep.
The rest
and that
of
happens.
Like,
as
didn't
that,
even
as
bother
happens.
To try.
Stupid beholder not being in boxes.
I'm sure they'll fix that.
Next time I'm going to send my... I'll just have Robin pick a box. She'll have more luck at it. Yeah. Got to pick the beholder box, honey. Never mind. Tell you later.
Essentially, what we're talking about is Wizards of the Coast announced, Thursday, October 23rd, D&D brand manager Scott Rouse posted some more details. Wizards of the Coast has chosen to concentrate its D&D Minis creation effort on an accessory line optimized for D&D role-playing game use.
Thank God.
November's release of Demon Well will be the last set that includes skirmish statistics. They'll continue to update all miniature stats from previous sets to the current D&D Miniatures rule set as promised, with the conclusion of that process scheduled for mid-2009. In addition, official sanctioning of the D&D Miniatures skirmish events will cease right after the D&D experience in February. In other words, they're not going to support D&D Skirmish anymore after February of next year. The Skirmish game has made many dedicated fans, and we appreciate the years of enthusiastic support that these players have shown into the line.
But we're saying, sorry, yeah, so long.
We're not making any new rules. It doesn't mean you can't play the game still.
Still funny.
It's not like computer games where you have to activate them online now, and if the company decides 5 years down the road, so sorry, we no longer want to support that game. You can't actually activate
it. I'd look at Wizards'
anymore.
Website, but their site is down.
Really?
Yes, their service is unavailable. You're probably thinking of DOS. Their initial release says the D&D players. They've received a tremendous amount of feedback from fans regarding D&D Miniatures line and have made some exciting changes for 09, Scott Rouse said. As part of our continued dedication to meeting players' needs for making gameplay more fun, we're changing our approach to the Minis product line. The D&D Minis Player's Handbook Heroes and D&D the Dungeons & Dragons Miniatures Monster Manual series will be available starting in spring of 09.
Thank you.
Addressing
Thank
demand
you.
For more PC Minis, the D&D Heroes line features high-quality miniatures representing iconic player character races and classes described in the Player's Handbook
they
and Player's Handbook 2, allowing players to find a miniature that best represents their PC. The Monster Manual sets are designed to be what every Dungeon Master and D&D enthusiast needs to create riveting adventures and exciting encounters at all levels of play, and will include monsters of various shapes and sizes. Now, the Player's Handbook Heroes will have 6 different packs with 18 total miniatures, features Martial Heroes, Arcane Heroes, Divine Heroes, and Primal Heroes.
That's all they need. Yeah.
Each package will contain 3 PC minis, 2 males and 1 female, and corresponding power cards featuring new class powers. New yeah. packaging makes all three figures visible so players know exactly which set to pick. Releases will be refreshed regularly, continue to deliver new PC options to players. Suggested retail price is going to be $10.99.
That's not bad.
Full painted
minis? That's not bad.
The Monster Manual Dangerous Delves will be the first Monster Manual themed release. It'll be a 40 miniature set, includes medium and large figures. Each booster box will contain 5 semi-randomized minis, 1 visible figure, 1 rare figure, 1 uncommon figure, and 2 uncommon figures. So each box also includes full-color D&D Dungeon Delve stat cards. Additional theme releases will follow for $14.99.
So about the same.
They'll be no longer packaging miniatures in its current configuration of randomized booster packs and huge packs. D&D Demon Web will be the final release in fully randomized booster packs. So in essence, the Monster Manual release is semi-randomized, it looks like.
Oh, that kind of sucks. We want them less.
But it
depends on
what that semi-randomization is.
Yeah. Right.
It could be that it's green skin.
If you guys are listening to us, what we'd really like to see is certain iconic monsters released in packs of multiples of themselves.
Right.
Goblins.
I want to be able to get a beholder. You know, things like that.
I want a beholder. Yeah.
Certain creatures should be sold by themselves. Don't sell them for $15 a piece, but yeah, we'd like to be able to buy
or
a beholder.
A beholder with a couple of other abomination type creatures.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, like, you know, they can do, we'll look at the like you've been going through the Monster Manual making the monster cards. Like you could do the categories, like have an angels box or something like that, saying this is what's in here, plus it has other I would like it to have an idea saying this also has goblins in it. It's like, here is our goblins box. Here's the big chief nasty goblin, hobgoblin, whatever, or bugbear. And then you have other hobgoblins.
Other random hobgoblins.
I would be 100% fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at least you can put any goblin on the table and
like,
say,
I need some goblins tonight.
But
bunk, bunk,
who cares? Done. His weapons don't match. That's fine. But at least he's a goblin. Instead of this marshmallow is.
I will also point out that Reaper has started to listen to us at least, too. They've started putting out 3 packs of their. I don't remember. But they started putting out 3 packs of, like, you know, goblins and stuff like that.
Instead of the single figures that were, like, $6 a piece?
Yeah, or actually they were more like $5 a piece, depending on how big the figure was.
The skeletons were $5.99 a piece, because I looked at them and I was like, oh.
Yeah, those were not acceptable.
No.
I looked at it and said, I'm going to use my Warhammer skeletons and just...
Yeah, you paint some, you go... I do 2 little strokes. White, silver, or gray for the weapon.
Actually, I do a little bit more than that. I go white, and then I go bone white. I dry brush bone white, and then I paint the weapons. They look like they're kind of aged bone.
But it looks like they've reduced the price on a lot of their stuff. Now they're maxing out at about $5.
Okay.
Like they just put out a new zombie that's $2.50.
That's not bad.
Though I still would rather have a pack of zombies.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
I want multiples of figures. Most of the monsters we use, you never fight them by themselves unless they're big.
Like a minion pack would be awesome. Instead, we're going to be making our own minions.
But it looks like what they're doing is using some old molds. Because I'm seeing some minis in the line that are actually look like some of their stuff from like their Warlord series.
The metal minis?
Mm-hmm.
But they're plastic.
But they're pre-painted plastics.
Cool. That's cool. Reaper?
Yeah, the Reaper metal minis are very nice. I haven't run into a lot of flashing problems on them either, which some people complain about.
We like the Reaper minis.
Yeah, but
For individual models, they work nice. We're trying to work on my gods right now, and we're using Reaper minis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Reaper minis are, I mean... In our very first show, I think we did one of our first couple shows, we did a big review on Reaper Minis, and we went off and on and on about how awesome they are. So
they are. Though actually, with Warhammer going to plastic, they're going to be a little bit better.
Pricey.
Yeah, but I don't know. They're getting a little.
They're not getting any better. What they're doing is they're actually reducing the sizes of the packages, and the prices is being modified for the size of the packages, so you don't have to buy, like, I need 10 skeletons. Yeah. I don't need 40 more skeletons for my army. I need 10 to flesh out a unit. I can buy 10 skeletons.
Yeah. What I spotted, like, they started selling, like, 3 packs of, like, skeletal archers. Orc spearmen, and they're about, let's see, the archers are 579, the orc spearmen are $7 for three of them.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
So
depending on how cheap, bad the paint
looks like, those are the only ones they have so far. It's the only ones I'm seeing readily on their website. But they're getting better, and as long as they stick with it, I think it'll be cool. They got a big purple worm now for $7.
Really?
Heller?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Actually, that would be useful. How about a beholder?
No, they can't do a beholder.
Yeah, well, yeah, they can't do a beholder.
They could
it's
do
an intellectual
a,
property.
They could do a creature with multiple eyes.
They could do a creature called an evil eye.
That's not bad.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But they do have mind flayers. Something that looks like
actually,
mind flayers.
Actually, that would be
for pre-painted. That's they're cheap.
What is that? There's like a worm that looks like kind of like that in D&D. What's that thing called?
Purple worm.
Purple worm.
Yeah.
Is it actually just called a purple worm?
Yeah.
This is, I believe, their version is called the grape worm.
Oh.
But it's
but yeah.
a purple
it's
worm.
It's purple worm.
I mean, they're not bad.
That, the paint job actually looks fairly decent for a pre-painted, you know, pre-painted plastic mini. I mean, some of the pre-painted jobs are really good. I mean, you look at the WizKids mm-hmm. products,
like
and they were exceptional.
They have a Mind Flayer with a staff for $5 now.
He used to be like $8 by himself. They brought the prices down a bit.
Yeah. And so it sounds like, I mean, Reaper, it basically means we're getting a lot of good basic stuff.
That's what we need.
Yeah, we got Skeleton Swordsman, 3 for $5.79.
The most ridiculous thing is not having
Spearman,
basics.
Spearman, 3 for $5.79.
You know how hard it is finding just hobgoblins?
3 orcs with scimitars, $6.99. 3 orc archers, $6.99. Spearman's, 3 for $6.99.
Yeah, it's really hard just finding one specific monster, multiples of it.
Yeah, and simple monsters. We're not talking like how I don't know. It annoys me.
And the, yeah, there's those bag of skeletons,
only,
bag of goblins, bag of hobgoblins
yeah,
things, but they're
the only
they're
issue,
not painted. And
no,
the only issue I really have with them with the Reaper pre-painted stuff are the bases.
Yeah, the bases suck.
Well. You have to pretty much put them on their own base. You have to put them on a circular base or use a Warhammer base or something like that. Other than that, they're not bad. But speaking of Warhammer. We've been playing Warhammer lately.
I've been getting my ass handed to me in Warhammer, I think is the correct term.
We've been playing, Warhammer Mighty Empires?
Yep.
Yeah.
The only person who's been doing well is Ethan right here with his Army of Chaos.
Surprisingly, Chaos has been doing well, which is a new experience.
I'll
be transferring to the new system soon, though, so to the new book. I should be getting that probably end of this next week. So.
Yeah, with the fact that the Hell Cannon is now how much? 100 and some odd points to feel?
No, it's not that cheap, but it's actually fieldable in a smaller army now.
Yeah. It's just crazy choices. But, yeah, I played as the dwarves. I played my first pregame. I managed to eke out a victory against Ethan basically only because I actually managed to hold more of the table, which was my goal.
Yeah.
And then I got slaughtered by...
Well, that was actually before we started playing Mighty Empire.
And I got slaughtered by Chris with his Lizardmen. I got slaughtered by Chris with his Lizardmen because he uses the cheap-ass tactics that the Lizardmen are well known for.
Well,
I got slaughtered in the actual game because he used more actual fanatics than he actually could with the Warbands rules, and they did 22 hits.
We didn't know about that.
Yeah, we didn't know about that, and actually, this was the surprise. This was actually a surprise, but the software that we used to create the armies, the army builder didn't catch it either.
Yeah, the army builder didn't catch it, didn't flag it.
Yeah, which
it
normally does.
It's odd,
because
I bug reported it. So.
Yeah, he only had 16 goblins, and he used 3 fanatics, and you can only have.
I did not realize
you can
how
only
nasty
have,
fanatics are.
Yeah,
they
you can only have one fanatic for 10. You can only have 2 fanatics up to 20, and above 20, you can have 3 fanatics.
Yeah.
But you can't have more than 3 fanatics in a unit, no matter how big the unit is. And he used 3 fanatics with 15 goblins on me, and they slaughtered my entire unit.
Billions of fanatics.
Slaughtered my entire unit. All that was left was my unit, my army general.
Army
I'm like,
has completely gone crazy.
Crazy.
I had one guy left, and I was like, oh yeah, facing 15 goblins. Doesn't matter that he's the hero
the
of the army. Yeah, I quit.
Don't forget about the gun guys.
I couldn't fire anything because the way he moved things through places that they weren't actually supposed to go.
I'm just saying, gun guys.
I couldn't move to fire at them. Yeah, I couldn't hit anything. Anyways, the dice were killing me. But I'm not using the catapult anymore because there's no close range combat.
My imperial mage was defeated by
back off.
Back off.
It's picking you up just fine where you're at, dude.
They don't like me talking into the mic.
No. In fact, I'm just going to mute you right now.
My Imperial Mage was destroyed by a horde of chaos, and he wandered off into the wilderness and is now insane and slowly building a
necromantic army.
Undead army, which will soon cross the land and destroy everything in its wake. But in the meantime...
Yes, I believe
In the meantime...
We've got about four rounds in it, and we're about to start the fourth round.
Fourth round.
I have an Imperial Engineer with exploding pigeons. That is the most awesome thing in the world.
Yeah, that's
funny. I made boots out of the lizard men last time.
Well, that's what you do with lizard men.
So the tide of chaos is wiping across the land.
Exploding pigeons. That's all I gotta say.
It's true. Exploding
pigeons. Which is really cool. I'm just gonna...
I gotta say, 10 chosen Chaos Knights of Zeke.
God, they're impossible.
Yeah.
No. Smaller groups can be taken. We know this for a fact.
Yes.
We had one Ogre Kingdom's Iron Guts stand up to like three horsemen for four rounds before running them off.
They weren't chosen knights.
Yeah.
I am waiting for...
But he finally ran them off and ran them over and killed them.
I am waiting for a direct...
That ogre right there. No, I don't care about those. That ogre right there.
I am waiting for a direct mortar hit, though.
Goes off, that's going
to
be
just
mad.
To see what happens.
Well, it did hit. Your mortar did actually hit my chosen knight.
Yeah, but that
was
a side hit.
It was a side hit, and they sort of looked at you and went, is that all you got?
That was a side hit. A direct hit is a much better.
Yeah, direct hit will do a strength 6 hit on the guy underneath.
Anyway, so basically we're playing Warhammer.
Yeah, so we've been playing a lot of Warhammer. We've been having a good time with it, too.
Yeah, even though I've been absolutely massacred in every game I've played, pretty much.
Play to have fun. That's what you need to do.
I'm playing with the ogres now because the ogres, the whole goal of the ogres is to eat as many people as you can before they get killed.
Yes, so. But it's quickly turning into a chaos game.
Yes, it is. And that's another reason why I'm playing the ogres, because the ogres will work for the army that pays them the most money.
It's true. Cha-ching!
Yeah. And the army that has the most money right now is, what do you know, chaos.
Me, yes. Let's go kill some empire dudes. Have fun with that.
But yeah, this next Friday is not going to work, because it's Becca's birthday, so.
Yeah, we've been having fun with it, though.
Maybe the Friday.
Also having fun, speaking of Warhammer, is Warhammer Online.
Yes!
I've been having lots of fun with it.
If I had more time
Jeremy
to play.
Jeremy can't have fun with it because his computer doesn't like running it.
His computer's not fast and strong enough to run it.
Yes,
unfortunately.
Warhammer Online does take quite a bit of effort. I'm having a heck of a lot of fun with it, though. So.
I have fun with it, I just never have time to do it.
Yeah. Entertaining, fun stuff, falling into the online... craze.
We're just gonna stick with WoW for a while until our accounts expire and then not worry about it.
Yeah, so. Probably a good way to go.
Yeah. Or I just might couldn't figure do out. Our accounts again, I don't know.
I couldn't figure out when they did the thank you thing where everybody was doing WAW, the WAW sound. I couldn't figure out why everyone was just like, WAH! I'm like, no, you gotta get the voice down, you gotta do it like they do in the game. No one was doing it. It's like, come on, you guys can do it. It's not that hard. If I can do it with my crappy voice, those people with nice voices could do it much better.
I want to point out our actual play feed is live, has been live for a few months now, and is wildly popular. We've been getting lots and lots of hits on that. We get at least about 100 hits on it a day.
Same person, probably.
100 normal subscribers usually right now. I think we just broke that as an average. So
hooray!
One person downloading it 100
times a day.
Yeah. Hey, whatever. I don't care.
hey, it shows up as 100 hits. That's still cool.
We have been playing, a lot of D&D. Jeremy transferred his game over to 4th edition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running the Sellswords of Punjar on occasion once a month. My brother is just about to, hopefully we're going to start finishing up the Keep on the Shadowfell. Andre, we've been playing 3-point Andre.
Yeah.
D&D 3-point Andre. And he's been running the Wizards College game, which has been fairly popular on the feed.
Because it's amusing as hell.
It is amusing as hell. And you get to hear me butcher a British accent through the whole thing. It's great. So far, I haven't completely pissed off anyone from Britain yet. Although our 8th Pagan guy, hi 8th Pagan, we love you.
Yes,
he has emailed me and said he should be offended, but
he's probably amused.
He's amused, so that's good. At your Halloween party, we played some Last Night on Earth and Betrayal at House on the Hill.
And of course, I got slaughtered in both games because it seems like I got picked on.
No.
We won the first game.
We won last night on Earth. We were the zombies.
Yes, but my zombies were the ones that got killed. They killed one of your zombies, and they killed like four of mine.
Doesn't matter.
It's like, Nathan, die!
Zombie unity, we won.
Yeah. United we stand!
United zombies stand, yes. Zombies ate people and did lots of nasty things.
But I have to admit, I stood up a lot longer in combat than I expected to against the last guy. The betrayal.
We did throw down a game on a Sunday with my Sunday crew. We did throw down a game of Talisman once, which took
forever. Fun, except the end just kept going.
I won. I killed everybody.
Really, once you get the crown, unless it's, you need to just
stop. Talisman's a lot of fun, but it's very random. Very, very random. But I was the thief, and I got the crown of command finally and obliterated everybody.
Not just he was an evil thief.
I was a horribly evil. I was a neutral thief, and then I was an evil thief.
We had a Halloween party last night that we were that we went to, and it was great fun. I dressed up as one of the immortals from 300. The Halloween store in our area was like 50% off, and so we got the costume for like half price, and the costume was pretty nice. And apparently, I won an award for like the scariest costume, and it was like scariest. I wasn't that scary, was I? It was probably the real sword strapped across my back that everyone was frightened of. Like, oh God, he's got a real sword!
Although at yours we had the scary Sarah Palin.
So. Yeah, that was the scariest costume we had at our party. We had a Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Nazi Palin? Is that what we've heard her called around here?
Actually, I like to call her.
Actually, I heard someone else call her that too.
Politics because, well, we're in Kansas. And we might get lynched.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what we vote here, because the state's going to vote to Republican.
Though, so we might be able to make it into Missouri to safety.
Yeah.
No, I just pretend my vote counts.
Well, I'll still vote. I'm still voting. I voiced my opinion.
I've already voted, so.
I'm just going to say it. I'm going to vote for the one that's not insane.
See, by the time this is out, we will
vote. You're all insane. No,
by
I'm going to vote.
By the time this is out, we will have a new president.
That's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll have the good one and not the dumb one.
That doesn't really help.
No, yeah. But, I really just want a do-over.
Do-over.
I am all for Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell.
Just nominate Bruce Campbell.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
This is after.
No. Right in Bruce Arnold Campbell. Schwarzenegger, because Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to turn into Running Man. It would turn into Running Man.
That would be awesome.
I don't want Schwarzenegger being president.
Oh, vice president at least.
Running Man.
I was elected to lead, not read.
Elected to lead, not read. Sigh.
You want
to
make this law? You have to survive past this, Running Man.
That would be awesome.
All right, is there anything else we want to throw out there right now?
I've been playing around with old computer games. I've been playing Fallout 3.
It's not really an old computer game.
Well, I haven't got to the old computer games yet. I've been playing around with Fallout 3. For those of you out there that are curious about the game, the easiest way to describe it is, hey, it's Elder Scrolls Oblivion with guns and lots of foul language.
Sweet.
that's it. I haven't found any differences. Some of the problems I've had with the game, of course, are the fact that you kill a guy and take his gun. It's like, oh, the gun does 2 points of damage. You shoot a guy, his health bar moves one notch. He shoots you with the same gun that you just got from his buddy that does 2 points of damage, and he does like 30 points of damage. And when you kill him and take his gun does 2 points of damage.
Maybe you're just softer and squishier than he is.
I don't know, but I'm like level 13. I have my gun skill maxed out at 98, which is as high as I can get. At long range with a pistol, I have like a 95% chance of hitting someone. When I do the VAT system, I still miss every shot.
Maybe they're just that good.
Every shot. And when you do the shotgun, when you use the shotgun, the combat shotgun is awesome up close, but at long range, it's like if it's farther than 10 feet away, you're not going to hit it with any of the buckshot. But when the enemy is using the shotgun, they can fire at you from across a river at 400 feet, and they hit you with every piece of buckshot, and you take like half your life in one hit. There are serious problems with the game. But the game is still fun.
It's the enemy accuracy up to 4 miles.
Yes.
Yes. Some games are really bad about
what,
that.
What do you have the difficulty set?
SDA, okay,
you don't have a difficulty slider. It's set at whatever the game decides. And it's like, if suddenly I was getting attacked by, they're called super mutants, right?
The super mutant had a chain gun, a minigun, right? Across the river. I don't know if you've ever seen a minigun fire, but the thing is so powerful. Basically, your bullets go in a pattern like this. His bullets were going like this.
That's nice.
And a circular pattern. It's like a big wide... Yeah, podcast. Sorry. And a big wide circle is usually the pattern of shot that you get on a chain gun, right? This guy was firing with a minigun, firing at me. It was in a straight line. I got hit with every bullet. 2.5 seconds. I went from full health at 480 hit points to dead.
Nice.
2.5 seconds.
Sounds like
got
a fun
the
game.
Same minigun from the guy, right? Damage is really high.
I think it just has the anti-Nathan code.
Yeah.
It's like, if your name is Nathan, or yeah. If it realizes your computer is registered to someone like Nathan, it goes, oh, you're boned.
But using the same minigun, my heavy weapon skill is not that high. There's a skill for using the heavy weapons. Not that high. But at close range, I'm supposed to have like a 50% chance to hit. You can watch the bullets in a circular pattern around the bad guys. When you fire the minigun, it's a giant circular pattern of bullets. When they fire the minigun, it's in a single straight bullet line. So it's like, well, the enemy is going to use the gun. It's going to do more damage than what you could ever possibly do with the gun, ever.
So don't play it.
Well, it's fun.
It's going to be
fun. I told you, it's fun. But the thing is yeah, it's not Fallout 1 or 2. So I went back and actually started playing Fallout 1 and 2, which is fun. Because in that game, when you kill things, things explode and die horribly all the time.
I know what I would like to know. Or that doesn't make any sense. You need to edit that. Monkeys. Anyway, I would like to know if anyone has played the DS version of the Lego Batman and Lego Indiana Jones.
No, but I have played the Xbox 360 versions.
Well, I would like to know about people out there, our fans. You know, all two of them.
Our fan, yeah.
Actually, what actually I've been playing lately, and this the old games I was going into, I've been playing a lot of the old Goldbox SSI games that I have lying around on the Amiga. So I was playing Eye of the Beholder 1 and 2 on the Amiga, and this shows you how old school the computers are. I mean, I'm playing it on an Amiga A2000, which came out in 1988, and I was playing Eye of the Beholder 1. That room sucks, where you get stuck in the room, and there's like this one little itty bitty button.
Room?
Huh?
Is that the dark room?
With the vampires?
Because there's this dark room that you walk in, and once you turn right or left, you can't get out.
Yeah.
You turn on a torch, nothing happens. Just like,
but there's a button.
Darkness.
There's a button on one of the walls.
Are there vampires in there too?
Yeah, there's vampires
Holy
in there
crap.
Too. There's a button on one of the walls. You press the button, the lights come on, and the door opens up, and you can get out. But finding that button means you have to click on every little stone on the walls.
What did I just do?
I
just did something.
I was been playing that. I played Hills Far, which I'd never played before.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, that game is terrible.
Yep.
But
not nearly as awesome as Pool of Radiance, the original, not Ruins and Myth Nor, which sucked donkey balls. Bad game, but the original Pool of Radiance, great game.
And then followed up by Pools of Darkness.
Well, the Curse of the Azurbands, which is good too.
Yeah, I have the Curse of the Azurbands series, all three of them. But there was Pools of Radiance, Pools of Darkness, and Pools of something else.
I think Jeremy's entropy aura has affected his laptop.
It's better now, I fixed it. It was randomly going to statistics of monster cards, and I'm like, what?
Sweet!
That doesn't even make any sense.
Nice!
But yeah. For anybody out there who's curious about where the systems came from, go look at like your local computer store. You can probably still find it, the Forgotten Realms archives.
Uh-huh.
That is a blast from the past.
Yeah, I'd say look in the $10 bin, or if you have a half price bookstore near you, go to their used
those are always
games,
nice.
Yeah, because they have tons.
Jewel case section.
Yeah,
hey, we might discuss.
To give you an idea, I found the King's Quest for Glory, Police Quest, and Leisure Suit Larry collector's boxes. In the boxes, two of them sealed in mint condition, got them all for like $50 on like eBay, which is the only other place you can get those. Not even mint, they go for like over $200 a piece. So check your local half-price bookstore, because you find some incredible deals there, let me tell you.
Well, we may talk about this in an episode, and maybe we should, but I just wanted to bring up the power cards we discussed. We should really talk about those at some point.
Yeah, that'd probably
because,
be a good idea.
I mean,
yeah.
All of this new 4th edition player-created stuff
Let's
that
say,
is useful.
After I get a chance to run 4th edition for the Saturday Night Crew for
yeah,
you guys and Andre,
I've read,
so that
I've
way
read
you,
most
can,
of the
you actually
book.
Get some play experience, we can have a 4th edition specific episode, I think.
Well, and player-created stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's an important conversation.
Yeah, there's
and
a lot of
what is
Watson
going to do?
Totally. Well,
wrap up real quick. I have two things I need to sort of go over real quick. First of all, KoboldQuarterly.com has launched. Kobold Quarterly is a magazine with big shoes to fill, keeps growing. Delighted to say that their articles, interviews, and new magic classes and monsters are reaching more and more readers with every issue. And gamers are liking what they see. If you have an article you'd like to see, you can write them a letter. If you're a subscriber or open design patron, you can send them a query for an article. They're open designers, one or two projects each year. They're written as open design commissions, funded by gamers who gain input into the final adventure or source book, who learn about steps involved in moving from idea to final publication. These projects are discussed on the Free City site and the Open Design blog. You can go to www.koboldquarterly.com. Perpetuated by Wolfgang Bauer. It's a really cool magazine. I checked it out at Gen Con. It's something you should definitely look into. And the other thing I want to point out is if you're in the Kansas City area within the next couple weeks, for November 20th to 23rd, 2008, is ShawnCon at the Best Western Indian Conference Center in Kansas City, Kansas. Admission to the show is $25 for the full weekend. They have single day passes as well, where you have $15 for a Saturday and $10 for Thursday, Friday, or Sunday. They also have youth prices for ages 13 to 17 for the weekend or for the single day. And if you're 12 and under, you get in for free.
I'm under 12.
There you go. Yes, Jeremy has the intellect of a 12-year-old.
Ha ha!
But they're doing
in for free.
D&D, GURP, Star Wars, Living Greyhawk. Heroes of Rokugan. They're doing some board games like Kayla, Settlers of Catan, Formula Day, Carcassonne, Lord of the Rings, Puerto Rico, and a lot of others. Their special guests this year are Aaron Williams, creator of Nodwick. He lives in this area.
Oh, really?
He does Nodwick PS238 and Full Frontal Nerdity comics.
That's kind of cool.
He also going to be there is Sterling Hershey, which is a Star Wars RPG freelancer for the D6, D20, and Saga edition. Author of the Force Unleashed campaign guide and the Star Wars miniature scenario designer for Wizards of the Coast. Find out more information at www.shauncon.com. shauncon.com.
I probably won't go to all of it, but I might go to a day when you're going.
Yeah, I think we might go to go on a Saturday or something.
The beauty about it is it's literally not too far from your guys' place.
Yeah.
So I mean, yes, still run your game on that Saturday because we're just up the street and go. Yeah.
You know. No, but...
And it's local, so it's like we don't have to worry about the hotel. Just
only
go,
$10?
Hang out, you know.
$10 a day.
$10 for...
A day pass, isn't it?
For $10 for a day pass, $15 for a Saturday pass.
Yeah.
And really, it's like...
Oh, so I could go Sunday, and it would be
$10.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I might do that.
So it's like, it's local. If we go, you're out, you know, sit down, have fun, play a game, play a board game, whatever. Yeah. And it's local, so it's like, okay, if we have other stuff to do... Go do it. You're in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's really Kansas City Con. Check it out. This might be my first year going. I tried to go last year, but my grandmother died. So, that was fun. Not really. But,
Anyways, on to happier news.
Anyway, that's it for the show today. Thanks for stopping by and listening to us ramble on about nothing. We obviously have a lot of upcoming episodes. We're not going anywhere. We are sort of cutting back to, you know, but probably about one episode a month for the time being, just for
until everybody's done with their school and stuff.
Yeah, also, the holidays are getting into full swing. We all know how much of a time eating that is.
Yeah, so. But we should still get together with one of the gaming groups and try to do a Christmas game.
Yeah,
we do a Halloween game. So we should do a Christmas game.
Well, actually, we didn't do a, well, I didn't do a Halloween
Santas.
Game this
Secret
year.
Secret of the Silver Santas. We could do it.
Well, on fourth ed too.
Mm-hmm. We could just do random characters. You want to come up with some characters and just have pre-generated?
We could work on it.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
Like a plan.
All right. We'll see if we can make that work with you.
Actually, I didn't do a Halloween game this year, but at some point in time, I am going to run the Call of Cthulhu game.
So I think generally,
one shot that
generally
I designed
what,
for.
What happens is Jeremy does Christmas. You do Halloween. I do April Fools.
Yeah.
My Halloween games are usually Cthulhu ones.
Because I could run April Fool's next year for Paranoia. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That would be awesome.
I didn't do it, this year, but I could try to do it again.
But my game was unfortunately was sidelined this year because Becca wanted it to be played up here in the living, in the kitchen. And she wanted to wait until everybody else was gone. I wasn't going to make everybody who wanted to play Call of Cthulhu wait until everybody else left, considering we still had people here at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Christmas game would be funny.
I'm still going to run that game, though. And all I have to say is this. Buy you Deep Ones. Oh, yeah. Buy you Deep Ones.
I didn't know you'd squeal like a bee. Hey, wait, I got a bunch of half lizardmen elephants. That'll work.
Deep Ones?
All I need is... That's exactly what...
Kuatoa.
Use that in every game, though.
Yeah.
Kuatoa is all I need for Deep Ones. Fish people.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yes.
We'll talk to you guys.
The Murloc song! Do you have access to the internet? That's what I wanted you to watch. I am Murloc. That is such a crazy ass song.
I am go to more YouTube. Than a fish. I am more than a man.
We're gonna like look at Murlocs and stuff, like Murloc pornography or something, and we'll see you next time.
Take care. Murlocs.
Can they eat Aquaman at some point? It's funny.
I am king of the fish, but I'm not Aquaman. Fish,
but I am not Aquaman.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States License, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com. And this has been a Thousand Monkeys production. Friday night and we're headed for the drive.